Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott both go back into the Wine Vault's history and pull out a 2001 Le Vieux Donjon Châteauneuf du Pape. So sit back, relax, and listen to the sheer elegance of the Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault, everyone. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
Tonight, folks, I am wearing my French beret for a reason.
On tonight's show, folks, we are going into the vault and pulling out an old Châteauneuf du Pape. The reason why we're doing this is, first of all, I want to drink it. Second reason is, it's Châteauneuf du Pape. The third reason is we just bought the current vintage of this wine. So it's kind of a interesting thing. Well, at least I did and Scott did.
We both did. We did.
I told Scott you should buy this and he did.
Because
he does what I tell him to do.
Well, because I listen every once in a while. Mm-hmm.
But that's the 2018 vintage. But this is not. Tonight's show, we have a 2001. Yes. 19 years old. Le Vieux Donjon Châteauneuf du Pape. Yes, Le Vieux Donjon. You know,
Donjon.
You've seen Donjon. They were the Wine Spectator darling back in the 2000s, 98, 2001, 2000. They were a big deal, high scores. This one got a 94 from Parker. I also have the 2004 back there that will be visiting us in the 2018. Maybe one or two others, too. I can't recall. Had this for many, many years. I don't know what this would go for. I spent $36.99 many, many years ago. Probably about 2004 I bought this, I would guess. Maybe even before that. This was back in the day where you could buy Donjon on your better store shelves. You had Domaine du Pagal. We always sold that. We sold Donjon. View Telegraph. I have a 03 View Telegraph in there. Many of those old Châteauneufs, and I have been derelict in buying more Châteauneufs. Actually, the Donjon I just bought this year was the most. I just haven't bought Châteauneufs. I buy a lot of Bordeaux. I like Bordeaux, but I have been neglecting buying Châteauneufs.
The past couple of years, we bought a couple because there were a couple you sent. Didn't you buy some of those?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, probably a dozen different Châteauneuf du Pape, maybe not quite that many.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's nice to sprinkle them through because they have good aging potential. They are grand wines, and they're beautiful. They're beautiful. The Pagal, though, is my favorite, although it's quite expensive. Although Donjon, it was reasonable. It was 54, I think, for the current vintage, which seemed light for Donjon.
54, 59, I forget.
It was under 60, where normally you'd expect 75, 80 for that. But we're very excited about this wine. We're very excited, though, to join you. And we have some stories to tell. And we also, in our potpourri, have you ever played a wine board game? Well, tonight, Scott and I are going to do a little bit of that.
We're pathetic.
It's a wine trivia game.
I mean, we made them up. We've played them.
We have. Well, we've made,
but
yes.
But now there's actually a board game we're going to play.
Well, we're not going to play it all the way through. We're going to sample it. And it's actually...
No, we're not going to play it all the way through.
No, we're not.
We wouldn't do that.
No. Depends on how good the Donjon is, I suppose. But we will do that later tonight. I'm glad I remember that because I would have forgot it. Nevertheless, we're doing that. We're doing this. We're doing a little bit of everything.
A little of this, a little of that.
Scott, I have a question, though, before we go to the break.
The answer, man.
Do you ever use the Vivino app? Do you use Vivino?
I've been on the website. I don't know that I use the app.
Well, I was at Giant Eagle today, and I saw a young couple. They were probably in their early 30s. They utilized the Vivino app. I saw it on their phone because they were taking a picture of a wine to make sure they were getting the best price. And they were buying Chloe Cabernet. Yes. They used the Vivino app to verify
that they were getting the best price.
I actually think that is the typical Vivino user would be the Chloe Cabernet purchaser, but you know, whatever. You know, I'm just saying that's pretty fucking stupid.
We've used Vivino on the show to see what $12.99
is. That the best price? I better check it on Clio. It's like, who the Chloe? I'm sorry, Chloe, not Clio. Chloe. It's like, who the fuck buys Chloe?
Well, you know, you could get it cheaper at Bob's Wine and Beer Shop in Hoboken, New Jersey. Yeah,
you could drive.
You pay $20 for shipping.
It's $10.99 there. It's like, dude. It's not going to change if you scan to see what the best price is. You're here. Where else are you going to go to get your Chloe Cabernet? You're going to stay here, or you're going to go to Hoboken, you fucking douche. They also had like a big thing of like a fruit platter, but it looked like it was mealy old shit. It's like pineapple that was the wrong color, watermelon that wasn't the right color. I don't know. It was just like, that's all the same color. But none of it is, it wasn't like pink or yellow. It was somewhere in between. And it was like this whole tray.
Artsy. We love purple pineapple.
It was like orangish. And it's like, I don't think that fruit is right. And then they're buying Chloe Cabernet. I went, okay.
Only the hip kids get gray grapes.
Do you want to get some spoiled milk too? It tastes better than Chloe Cabernet. Nevertheless, that was amusing to me. I
like my chicken gray.
I actually said loud enough, they probably heard me and went, my fucking God. I saw him take the picture with the fucking phone. You fucking, you know, my God. I'm going to continue to look at this, all these wonderful Orin Swift products over here. So, Jesus fucking Christ. Still can't find any Orin Swift to buy. I'm just not spending $50 on a fucking Orin Swift. So we can make fun of it.
You're not a fan.
To make fun of it?
Well,
I mean,
it's not all that bad.
Is it? What's that bad?
Okay. Well,
I mean, you know, man, you can get heroin cheaper than that. I mean, come on. I don't want to do that. Do they make
the Orin Swift or the heroin?
The Orin Swift. Do they? It's worse for you. Do they make Unshackled Merlot?
Seems like it. Or is that Smith & Smith?
Who's that?
Charles Smith. The Smith & Smith label. Line for Charles Smith. Unshackled.
Unshackled. No, you're not pronouncing it correctly. Unshackled. Has gold shit all over it. It just looks like an Orin Swift product. You see a douchey label that is like abstract, kind of crappy looking. You're like, is that Orin Swift? I mean, that's the first thing I come to.
Yes. If it's got some colorful labeling, it's like
douchey.
If it involves knives.
What did Steve like? 8 years in the desert or something like that?
Yes.
Just die in the desert. I mean, why?
No, it's not Orin really Swift. You know who does Unshackled?
Who?
A prisoner.
That is Orin Swift, you dipshit. Orin Swift is the Prisoner Wine Company. He makes Prisoner. It's the same one. Thank you. I thought so. The Prisoner, they've renamed it. The Prisoner is an Orin Swift wine. Ergo, Unshackled is Orin Swift. Yes.
I didn't know the Prisoner was Orin Swift.
That is the OG Orin Swift. That's right.
I like Machete.
Machete. You pronounced it incorrectly. Machete. Do you like it corked?
Yeah.
That's what we got. That was the one time we tried to do an Orin Swift-ish product. It was him and somebody else, and it was corked to hell. I mean, it was the most corked wine I've ever had in my fucking life. So, folks, we're going to take a break and then come back with the Le Vieux Donjon. Can't pronounce anything tonight. Here on the Wine Vault.
Unlicensed taxi driver here. When I'm out on the road, mayhem is everywhere. Mayhem doesn't care, but your local Allstate insurance agent, Craig Walters, does care. Are you in good hands? Are you in the good hands of Craig Walters Insurance Agency?
And if you're not, folks, please give Craig a call. His number is 740-862-4585. You can also meet him at his office at 107 North Main Street, Baltimore, Ohio. For auto, home, or life, give Craig a call. And we're back, folks. So, La Vue Donjon. Scott, what are your initial impressions of this wine?
You stick your nose in this glass and you know it's a cellared wine.
Oh, yeah.
It has an industrial machinery nose of, it's beyond, we talked about cordite, but it smells of hot metal.
Yeah.
There's a floral thing there in the background.
There is.
Like a sweet floral thing.
Mm-hmm.
The sediment in the bottle is noticeable.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Brickish isn't even the right term.
No.
It's beyond brickish. It's... there's about three different colors going on at the perimeter of the glass where we would normally talk about something being opaque or having a watery edge. This has like a rainbow at the line of fluid in the glass. There's a almost a golden hue at the rim of the glass with mm-hmm. the brickish tone. And then it almost looks fluorescent.
Well, Wine Advocate, as I mentioned, Robert Parker, he gave it 94 of his points back in the day. And he wrote, appears to be tremendous. Certainly one of the great donjons produced. Its dense, murky black purple color is followed by a gorgeous nose of creosote, licorice, black cherries, blackberry, pepper, incense, smoked herbs, and roasted meat. With exquisite concentration, copious tannins, and considerable delineation as well as structure, this massive promised Chateauneuf will require patience. And folks, go on and just take a look at what the scores this winery has just kind of compiled over the years. Now, Chateauneufs are predominantly Grenache, and then it's blent from there, you know, Syrah, and a multitude of other things that are in there. So it is a definite blend. And in reality, just the grand wine of Southern Rhone, that is Chateauneuf.
And when you look in the glass, you see the same kind of, it's almost a rainbow at that perimeter of the glass.
Oh, yeah.
The brickishness is there, but it's almost got a gold color about it.
Oh, yes.
It's beautiful. It's almost like, I said fluorescent, luminescent.
And we're drinking this out of Riedel Vinum Old World Syrah glasses, which is proper for Chateauneuf. There's only one thing left to do, Scott. Holy fucking shit. Oh. Wow.
It's not just red meat. That is like a 45-day
ribeye.
Dry-aged ribeye.
That is... I'm trying to remember what the bagel tasted like. But
this is anise.
Yeah. The herbaceousness is off the charts. I'm almost speechless. The mid palate is the best mid palate I have ever experienced from an herbaceous standpoint.
mint. Thyme.
Yeah.
There's that. It's that machine aroma, cordite on the nose, and it there is a bit of, it's beyond leather. The earthiness is beyond leather, but those herbal notes are distinct and precise.
Pipe tobacco. Well, just a tobacco feel, but not drying as you would find in some versions of that. It is just the essence of tobacco. But beautiful crescendoing. I mean, it has the delicacy of Pinot, but the power of something far, far grander. It's such an interesting mix. I love the lithiness to it. First of all, on the front palate, it still has this vibrance that just excites you. I mean, it's so exciting. And then just that massive herbaceousness that comes across with, what is the fruit there?
Yeah, and that's what, it's just this essence
plummy
of fruit on the... Not quite.
What was once. It's a plum. It's plum, Scott. It is a fleshiness and the flavor profile of a plum with the red meat streaking minerality behind it. It's plum. It's plummy. Not plummy like a cab. Yeah, think about what a plum tastes like. But all that backstrap of just the smoky, meaty goodness. And not smoky in the fact that it's smoky, but you have a great piece of smoked brisket. And you have that nice, charred fattiness that goes there.
Yeah.
That emanates through this wine. It's so gamey and just right down our pike.
Yeah.
You know what's cool? We have drank so many wines that have emulated this, would like to be.
That one, this is what they want to be when they grow up.
Yes. They never quite can go that long. But, you know, so many wines we've had on the show, because we have a lot of baby, you know, Grenache blends from France, you know, from Languedoc or from Rhone or whatnot. And they all say, I'm Chateauneuf. You're not Chateauneuf.
I'm Chateauneuf to pop.
This is Chateauneuf, and it's 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And it is a delicate, but yet powerful, beautiful thing.
I'm still searching. There's an exotic, fleshy fruit.
There is.
Plum-like.
Okay.
That is what I'm thinking of, and it's just escaping me. But it's
quince or kints.
Kints.
Kints. I don't know what this says like.
It's Brazilian star fruit.
It's mango. Mango chutney.
No.
What
a nice Pacific snapper with mango chutney.
Mango. What did
Wolford.
Well, I mean, obviously it's not going to show the same fruits that it did then. Can you imagine right out the gun? Back in like 2004, what this would have tasted like? It would have tasted like a steam train just blasting you in the face. It's still going to have all the smoked herbs. I mean, that's what we're tasting. All that smoked herbs and all that stuff is still there, and it's so gorgeous.
But it's easy. The thyme, it's so easy to pick out. If you know what, particularly when it's slightly dried. If you've ever grown herbs in your garden, they're so easy to do and so easy to dry.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like that first year of that dried herb. It reconstitutes so quickly, but it also is so succinct, and it kind of concentrates that expression of that herb. This is thyme all day long.
You know, with this wine, This is why you age wines, because you want to get to this point where it's something special. You could have had this when it was young, and it would have been some sort of brick house. It would have smacked your face with a freaking sledgehammer, and you would have noticed all the nuance. But holding it back and letting it mature, and you have to have the proper, you know, the proper climate to do that. But if you do, wines can achieve something that's something different. And that's what this is. You don't do this with all your wines. You do this with some of your wines because you want to experience this sometimes. Do you always drink mature wines? No, you do not. There are many things you're going to sprinkle in that are fresh, big, young wines. That's great. But you do take some of those wines that you're buying that are of a higher cut and you mature them because you want to then experience what they can do when they're older. You do. You might want to buy more than one, experience something when it's younger than when it's older. You can do that. But for things like this, they are best allowed to achieve their maturity. They're best allowed to be that. Because when they create these things, they want to say, they don't say pop and pour. They say, let this wine become what it wants to be as it gets older. You're allowing the wine to live its life, and then you experience it. These are special things, wines like this. And there are many wines like this that are out there. You let the wine experience its life in the bottle and then consume it. And then, like what we do, we have places of prominence for these things. We'll never forget this. This isn't going in the trash. And we memorialize these things because we love them. But at the same time, these are wines that are special. It's nice to replace them too with younger things, and you know.
But, you know, earlier you mentioned the the Pagau.
Yes, which is really good.
This one's more herbaceous than that one was.
This is not quite as big as the Pagau.
It's not as big as the Pagau, and that still had some. That still had some tannic backbone to it. That, well, that still had some life.
That was a brick house. That was also another... it was in 1998.
Yes, and it had... based on the tannic level of it, it had more life to it yet.
Oh, 5 to 7 years on that, dude. This is ready to be drank. This is when you should drink it.
This is... yeah, I wouldn't want to let this go any longer, right?
No. It's not going to get any better than this.
You nailed this pulling this out.
It's peak. You could have pulled it out a couple years before, but this is peak. This is experiencing a mature Chateauneuf. And that's why you buy. That's why I bought it. I don't buy, and that's the thing. I don't buy these grand wines to drink them early. I never do. I always let them sit. My ports, I mean, vintage ports sit, and they will be drank within the window that I think they're appropriate. And that's a long time from now. You know, I have dowels and some other stuff that are sitting there, and they're back from the early 2000s, and they're not being touched yet. They might be touched another 5 to 7 years, but then I have another crop. And what I do with that is, for those that don't spend $10,000 a year on wine, I mean, if you're like us, you have a normal... well,
yeah, we're normal people.
Well, yes, but we have a slightly larger budget than some people might have for wine, but that's okay. Yes, our gross GDP is probably a little higher for wine. But nevertheless, what we tend to do is we for years, on certain years, we'll focus on a certain style of wine. So then the next year, we'll switch to the other one. So you'll have this window where, okay, in 7 years, this is what I'll be drinking that's mature. And then you switch it up. That's how I kind of do it. So right now I'm on a Bordeaux kick. Last couple of years I've been on Bordeaux kicks because I drank a lot of my aged Bordeaux. I still have a few left, half a dozen. But now I'm replacing those with new things. And I also am really into Bordeaux. That being said, Chateauneufs probably are worth it. And Chateauneufs actually, on average, are cheaper than Bordeaux. They just are. We bought this, and this is a grand winery. This is a top-level Chateauneuf producer.
I think when you're talking about sellable selections, that's true, but I think there are a lot of Bordeaux that are more drink now that are really reasonably priced.
Oh, true that. But, I mean,
Where that Chateauneuf, that entry price, there really isn't an entry price for Chateauneuf.
No.
You're not going to find stuff in the 20s for Chateauneuf.
No.
At least not here in the States.
But Chateauneuf, it's done differently. Chateauneuf is a top appellation.
Right.
In and of itself. So, like in Bordeaux can be multitude of things. You have satellite Bordeaux, you have Bordeaux that are blended across all the AOCs. I mean, and then you have Grand Crus.
I mean, I guess you could say that some of the Rhone blends are the entry price Chateauneufs to some degree. You could say that, you know, the Grenache based.
Spiritually, I suppose, but that's not.
It's not the same.
No. They don't taste anything like Chateauneuf. I mean, you could say that with... I mean, we just recently... We didn't do it on the show. We probably should have, but we did a bottle of Augustus Klopp Coronas. What year was that? No, you and I... You drank it.
Yeah.
What was it?
What year was that?
2002. Remember that? But that's primarily Syrah. That's the difference there.
Right.
That's Northern Rhone. So... Sometime I'm going to buy a little bit more Northern Rhone, but I actually, for Syrah, I enjoy the Callies.
Yeah, you're, and it's not your favorite grape.
I bought some stuff from Tinsley and a few other places. I don't mind a Syrah now and again, but yeah, the problem with that, it's actually you can get some decent budget Cali Syrahs, where you don't get budget French Syrahs. I mean, they don't.
Yeah,
but
not here.
No, Lord no.
Stone fruit.
If you say so.
That's what this is.
I've never eaten stone fruit. I don't know what it tastes like. Pardon my ignorance. I've seen stone fruit as a descriptor, but normally in white wines. There you go, Scott.
And it's amazing the texture of this wine, watching it being poured in the glass, it just has a different texture about it.
It does.
As it was thinning from the decanter, you could see the brickish, then the golden hue.
Yes.
Then almost stark, like yellow, like dandelion at the perimeter of it. It's to see what an aged proper wine can be.
Yeah.
Is amazing. It's just amazing. And any other wine that you drank and it was yellow, you're like, what the fuck's going on here? And it's shit yellow.
You're like, damn this Ars Vitis. But look, it has a snowy picture on the back.
Of a man riding a horse.
No.
Bare-chested.
It's normally a winter scene. Have you ever had Ars Vitis? There is a unpublished episode. Triple B and I did a bottle of Ars Vitis once. Somebody left it here. And orange curd and custard. No, I'm sorry. Lemon curd.
Okay, lemon curd.
Or orange curd. Wait a minute. Lemon curd and custard. Lemon curd, custard, drink. Yeah. Never did anything with that. That's many years ago. I wouldn't even be in stereo. It was before we knew how things worked.
I love custard. In a donut or in a frozen confectionery dessert product.
Yes, but if you look through the bottle on the backside, there's art. And you're like, wow, it's a winter scene. Just saying, it's collectible.
Vodka bottles. Kitschy spritzer waters.
Yeah.
But wine?
No.
No.
Never. No.
I mean, I appreciate about this bottle. It has some raised lettering.
But this is the... All Chateauneufs have a raised...
Yes, and I appreciate that about them.
Yeah.
With, you know, typically what the family crest.
It's a crest. Yeah. Well, it's a Chateauneuf crest. It's the actual crest from... So it says, Chateauneuf du Pape, contrôlé. So if you are classified as Chateauneuf, you have this raised lettering on your glass, on the bottle itself.
Mm.
It's beautiful. You'll notice the Pagala also has that. See it? Same thing.
Gotcha.
Yep. Chateauneufs, all Chateauneufs need to have this. So look for that. If it doesn't have that,
it's not a Chateauneuf.
It doesn't say Chateauneuf du Pape, control it. And not on a sticker. We're talking, it is raised in the glass.
In the glass.
It is a bottle in the glass.
At the shoulder.
So theoretically, all the Chateauneuf bottles are the same. They just put different labels on them. That's how you know it's actually Chateauneuf. Wonderful. Wonderful. So, folks, we're going to take a break. And then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So the word that escaped me for Chateauneuf, you're looking for an embossed crest on there. So it should say Chateauneuf du Pape with a crest and then Contrôlé on the bottle, and it's embossed.
I mean, off the air, we had some debate. It's raised designer symbol.
We're just stupid, and we don't know the English language. So,
well.
And we're also doing this show, folks, under the influence of copious amounts of alcohol. So come on. Give us a fucking break. You know, seriously, we're drunk.
I played in a band with that dude, Copious. This is the second badass drummer, folks, man.
Scott and I drank pretty much a whole bottle of Pinot Noir before we did this. Becky had two sips. Can't disclose why, but she had two sips. We drank a whole fucking bottle of Pinot Noir. Now we're drinking Chateauneuf. We're drunk. Give us a break. So.
I'm just getting started, son.
Bastards. So, this Christmas season, I got from one of my coworkers, who also had COVID. It caused the fact that I missed a whole week of work while I was at home working from home because she had fucking COVID. She got me an excellent gift, a very thoughtful gift. Very thoughtful gift. She got me a board game called Wine Wars. And essentially, it's a trivia game. We're going to actually play the physical game. I'm sure we'll play it some night when Deb's over and Deb will hate her life because this is actually for someone years. It's difficult.
Oh.
It has like pieces to it and shit.
It's sold at Walmart.
Nobody at Walmart's buying this, man.
I'm telling you, it's the same price at Walmart as at Amazon.com.
It has like things that you put. She bought it, I think, at Marshall's. So nobody's buying it.
So nobody's buying it.
No, but that's because nobody's into it. We are. It even comes with like a little gold bag with like wine bottles in it. See? It's like a little wine things. I think it like works like Trivial Pursuit where you have like the pies. And then you have to put like similar to that. And it has a die. And I don't know how that works. But apparently you roll it and then you know.
Now keep in mind, this is not the Wine Wars Belgarde, the fantasy Dungeons & Dragons type game.
It's also not Wine Wars the podcast because they no longer podcast.
What? They quit? Did they quit on us?
They should have because they suck. I've made fun of them several times, folks. They were a mashup of wine and Star Wars because you wanted that.
I want it.
No, you don't.
I do.
You're so anti anything that's sci-fi.
Well, I did read a sci-fi novel recently.
You're more reading, yeah.
It wasn't very good. It was weird.
The one episode I listened to of Wine Wars, they had, it was a couple, two couples.
It's two couples.
So that's not exciting. But
well, they were very exciting.
They probably live in an apartment somewhere.
Attractive people.
And they were, I'm betting they weren't. And so they probably drank things out of theme cups. But they were, one of the ladies was making fun of her significant other because of the way he changed light bulbs.
Okay.
That was all I had. I was like, I didn't get the joke. It didn't involve a penis, so I didn't think it was funny.
There's that.
They didn't do that. They didn't say penis.
And you're the advanced metal one in our show, likes penis jokes.
I just love a dick joke. I like to draw dicks for you to identify.
You somehow, and the superstar like dick jokes.
Somehow you always can identify the dick, and that's...
Well, I spend a lot of time straight across from him.
You look at the dicks. Yep. So, what I'm going to do on this is we're going to alternate. Scott, I'm going to ask Scott some questions. Uh-oh. Because it comes with a question, and there's different categories.
Oh, so a trivia game that you ask questions in.
Yes.
How unique.
The categories are wine to vino. It's growing grapes, making wines, and world production. Second one is graposphere, which isn't a real word. That's okay. Grape varieties, their wines, and their geography. The next one would be wine cellar, selecting, storing, and tasting wine. The next category is wine and food. Sorry, folks. Bo is, who knows what he's chewing on. Hopefully some poisonous. Yeah. Cooking with wine, food, and wine pairing, and wine service. Then the last category is cork and cork culture. Wine, people, businesses, arts, and sciences, and trivia. Essentially, this is a trivia game about wine trivia. Apparently, all the answers should be James Suckley.
I'm the pedophile.
Can you imagine that the party that would involve this? First of all, I would go to that party. But
you'd host it.
That would. But it would be so shitty. I mean, I think everybody that listens to this show really probably should buy this game. But we're going to find that out. We're going to ask some questions.
The party would be the penophile, James Suckling, and Tim Atkins, just to make things awkward for Mr. Suckling.
Tim Atkins and James Suckling would become missing for like 35 minutes.
Now, see, I don't think Atkins is on with that.
Then you want to bleach your sheets. So Scott, I'm going to ask you the first round of questions right here.
You know, sometimes you play a game and it's just like there's a time lapse. It's like you just lose time sometimes. And this is one of those games. It's so enjoyable.
It's not like you've ever played it before.
It's not like I've ever played it before.
So we're going to start off with wine to vino. Okay? Don't cheat. Here we go. The first category, wine to vino. What alternative viticulture is organic and synchronizes vineyard work with phases of the moon and stars? I'll probably get a...
Dipshit-itis?
Is Cabernet a red or white wine? No, Scott.
This is not a question for Steve.
Okay, dummy. It's biodynamic viticulture.
Yeah. Good for them.
Dumbass.
Yeah, sure.
Tell you what.
Of course,
Scott,
it is.
Let's alternate. So now you ask me one.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
What?
Don't drop.
You're twisting things up. We're going to have
this is a free game. Don't.
We're going to have the. Let's do the time warp again. What was the first category again?
Vine to vino.
What is the term for grape solids and dead yeast cells that settle to the bottom of a wine tank during fermentation and aging?
Is that must?
Lees.
Oh, lees. Yeah, right.
Lees.
Stirring the lees.
Stirring the lees.
Yes. Normally referred to with Chardonnay, but I'm sure it happens with other ones. So next is graposphere. True or false? Chenin Blanc wines from the Loire Valley are predominantly one style of dry white wine.
False.
It's false, Scott, because it's called a chameleon wine. Chenin Blanc can be dry, sweet, or sparkly.
Similar to Riesling. It can be all the above. You just don't know what you're going to get if you just go off the label. Which is the place name for Spanish red wines made primarily from Tempranillo and Grenache blends? Rioja or Rueda?
Well, Rioja is predominantly Tempranillo.
Which is the place name for Spanish red wines made primarily from Tempranillo and Grenache blends?
What's the second one?
Rioja or Rueda?
Well, I'm going to go with Rioja.
That's the answer. That's the correct answer.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that there are some with trace blends of other things. So now we're going to go on to wine cellars. Which classic bottle shape will be narrower with high shoulders? Bordeaux bottle or Burgundy bottle? Oh, that's a stupid question.
Burgundy bottle. Or Bordeaux bottle.
Yes, Bordeaux bottle.
The Burgundy bottle is wider.
You're right.
Same category for the wine guy. Which flavor characteristic is least likely to describe wine? Which flavor characteristic is least likely to describe wine?
Mm-hmm.
This is weird.
Yeah. Some of the questions
are... Fruity, herbal, grapey, earthy, or spicy? Fruity, herbal, grapey, earthy, or spicy?
Well, any of them, but spicy...
Least likely.
Spicy, I suppose.
Grapey. And that's what I would have said, because why would it be least likely? Because if you're describing something as grapey, it's a shitty wine.
But what have they drank? We say grapey a lot. I mean, from our standards,
yeah. Jammy, grapey, yeah. Fruity, herbal, grapey, earthy, or spicy. I would go with grapey.
It's not a good.
That's why it's least.
That's a terrible question.
You just got it wrong, son.
That's a bad question. You got to acknowledge that.
No, I don't. I knew the answer.
No, you didn't. True or false? Products containing alcohol.
This is pairing food with wine.
Yes. Products containing alcohol and labeled cooking wine also have strong flavor ingredients to make them undrinkable.
I would say that's true.
Do you know why?
There's a reason things are labeled cooking wines.
Well, they're made undrinkable. They usually contain salt. That's why.
Okay.
You didn't know why. Did you know that? No, I didn't give a shit. Okay. There's a difference.
Same category for the wine guy.
That must be what's wrong with Livingston Cellars.
That's it. They put salt in it. Which?
And also, Zach Brown's wine, whatever that is, Uncaged.
This is dumb.
We put salt in it. I'm sorry.
Which variety of port is most likely to be used in cooking? Vintage? Like, that's a variety.
No.
Tawny?
No.
Or ruby?
Ruby.
Ruby port.
Yes, although vintages are rubies, but that's okay.
Yeah. True or false? We're skipping you.
Oh, okay.
France wine consumption rates have dropped more than 50% since 1980. True or false? France's wine consumption rates have dropped more than 50% since 1980.
Well, true or false? I give a shit about this question, but I would say true.
It is true. Changing dining habits among young wine drinkers are cited as a contributing factor. That's a pretty significant amount.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question, Scott. This is court culture. Who is the wine writer for USA Today? Frank J. Peral, Eric Asimov, or Jerry Shriver?
Well, Eric Asimov writes for the New York Times.
The fact you know that gets you a point.
I'm going with Shriver.
You're right.
I had no clue.
I know you didn't, but the fact that you knew who one of them was.
Well, we've read some of his stuff on the air.
We've made fun of some of his stuff.
No, but I think he does interesting stuff. And he does things similar to what we do. He'll have... fairly regularly, once, maybe twice a year, budget wines.
He would be fired if he does things similar to what we do. So.
Well, he doesn't use as many bad words as we do.
No, like motherfucker and cunt.
We don't say the C word. How dare you?
I just did. Which wine? Yeah, it's like, oh, we have this word we don't say. We've said everything.
You have. I don't say that word.
You should. It liberates
well,
you.
Well, if I was going to describe you, I should. But
you're a tight ass. Anyway, have you ever said
that
word?
Like the bad
thing. I've got to find a way to make you say that word. Like, Becky never says goddamn. She's very offended by that. Really offended. So you've said goddamn.
She also doesn't eat veal.
Yes, but she's very offended by that. But I got her to say one time, goddamn. And it involved...
Involved you pushing her down the stairs so that she broke her leg while she was...
No, I made a joke that... I'm not going to mention that because I don't even... I just know it was off color.
That narrows it down. Oh, our listeners are shocked that you said something to anybody that was off color, including your wife. That's a big surprise.
I would like to narrow it down. It was, in fact, not racist. Or sexist.
Okay.
I don't tell racist.
You're not a racist person. Sexist, yes. You're a misogynistic bastard.
Well, I would like to think that I'm not a racist person. I find that abhorrent.
Well...
But sexism, I find that amusing when people are sexist because that's just funny because it's so stupid. It's like a fine wine. You see someone that's so sexist but so fucking stupid they don't know it. You have to savor the sexism because it's like, wow, it's so 1950s. You're like, but, you know.
Yeah, Becky never complains about you mansplaining things to her.
Oh, she's
never,
just...
never.
Who gives a shit?
What's the first question?
Oh, yeah.
Vino culture? Is that the first category?
Oh, yeah, this is a doozy. Which vine species produces more than 99% of the world's wines? They give you a 50-50.
Yeah, species. Go ahead.
Venus labrusca or Venus vinifera?
It's the vinifera.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. But they shouldn't have given you that. Would you have gotten it if you got a 50-50? No.
I wouldn't have known the different species off the top of my head
As soon as I read it, I went...
But vinifera, I knew, was the number one
species. What the fuck is
Lambrusca? As soon as I heard it.
What is Lambrusca? Well, I know vinifera.
But a little bit of studying on that, and you know that that's the number one species.
But yeah.
I'm not studying for my song.
It doesn't help you drink. Okay, go ahead. Scott, ask me a question.
I don't know that it helps you want to drink.
It doesn't.
You drink while you study.
It doesn't. Go ahead.
Same category. What phase of winemaking? This is not the wine guy's strength. This is not his area of expertise.
Yeah, it's all 50-50. So
what phase of winemaking follows fermentation and knocks off the roughness of the wine?
Well, it's normally that involves...
Be very general.
No. Well, it's malolactic fermentation.
That's not this.
Knocks off the rough edges.
Maturation, finishing, or aging. So when you barrel it, or you would put it into...
Well, aging.
But not malolactic fermentation.
But you didn't give me the three options.
That was there. What they weren't listed. Those were the answers. Oh. Any of those would have been acceptable.
Well, what the hell? I didn't know three of a thing. I mean, I could have
aging,
said...
Aging. Just, it's the aging phase.
God.
So barreling. If you just said barreling...
But for white wines, that malolactic fermentation does that?
My turn.
That is a dumb question.
You were thinking too specific.
Well, for Chardonnay, that works.
Mm.
It's true.
Malolactic fermentation is fermentation by...
True.
Yes. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, fuck you. Anyway, what treatment is likely to give white wine made from Chardonnay grapes flip?
Malolactic fermentation.
The flavors of aromas of toast, vanilla, or butterscotch.
Malolactic fermentation.
Actually, no. Oak treatment.
Oh, which is the same thing that I said.
You dumbass.
Well. Oh, that's funny.
Toast, vanilla, or butterscotch? Oak.
Oak, exactly.
Yes, but you said malolactic.
Butterscotch, I thought... I wouldn't have known butterscotch. I should have listened more closely about the others.
Well, we drink butter Chardonnay, so what do we know?
We don't drink Chardonnay.
I like Chardonnay. Go ahead, Scott.
Chardonnay.
I do.
What name of honor refers to grape varieties recognized for their potential to make great
wine.
They have a multiple choice on that?
No. Think generally.
Okay.
Noble grapes.
Oh.
Usually named in association with the like
Cabernet and
yes.
What? Oh, God.
Pinot and Burgundy.
That's just the primaries. Pinot.
Sangio and Tuscany. Go ahead.
I would normally say primary grapes, but that's
I think we would have accepted that answer.
True or false? The legs of swirled wine running down the side of the glass indicates quality. I'm actually curious.
I say true.
It's actually false.
I disagree.
Okay.
Well, wouldn't you disagree? What's the answer?
I read the card. False. Legs are a complicated matter of physics and evaporated rates, not necessarily wine quality.
Evaporative rates. Yeah. Wrong.
I like when they say, are a complicated matter, and then not necessarily. So that means there is some element. So.
Well, for example, the Châteauneuf de Pape, it really doesn't have the finest legs or the most defined legs. It actually has really unusual legs.
Well, I think the better thing is there are some gray areas in the world of wine trivia. So go ahead,
I think they get it better than you did. Gray areas sounds...
I think it's...
Which wine will appear more monochromatic in the glass? Bulk wine or fine wine?
Bulk wine.
Bulk wine. Subjected to harsher treatment, bulk wines may also look dull. You would know about that.
If you hadn't asked me the question, yes, I wouldn't have. True or false, Scott? Wines stand on their own and needn't be served in any particular order at a dinner party.
False.
It's true. It says Scott is a douche. No, it says false, actually. The general, well, I don't know. Who the hell? We know.
Lighter to darker.
Young.
Lighter weight.
Young before old.
Young before old.
Light before full bodied and dry before sweet. And you'll never get the last one. But go ahead and ask my question there.
Which is the classic wine match with French Chavre or fresh goat cheese? Semillon, Pinot Blanc, or Sancerre?
What was the... Read that again.
What is the classic wine match with the French Chavre?
French what?
C-H-E, au Saint-Aigu, V-R-E, or fresh goat cheese? It's the same thing, French.
Okay.
Fresh goat cheese. Semillon, Pinot Blanc, or Sancerre?
That's difficult. Sancerre, Sauvignon Blanc, mostly. And it smells like cat piss. But it's nice. I know there's a right answer here. That being said, those are all fairly similar wines to a certain extent. All I can answer is what I prefer to drink with that. That would be Semillon, but it's probably wrong.
It's Sancerre.
I mean...
It's a classic pairing.
But those are all pretty cool. I mean, in the French treatment.
Sancerre's the bigger of those. With the bold taste of the fresh goat cheese.
I don't know that I would...
It's my turn. Ask my question.
Okay.
I want this question.
No, you don't. Which master sommelier makes wine more user-friendly in Target stores, on TV, and in her books, TVs, classes, and website? I had to look her name up because I didn't know either.
I don't know the answer.
Andrea Immer Robinson, because she... Robinson. You seen Robinson?
Andrea Immer Robinson. Don't know her.
I don't know her either.
Guess we should.
She's in this trivia game, though. So that is Wine Wars.
Her game. There's one more question.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
How many bottles does Emmylou Harris have left at midnight in her wine-titled song recorded in 2005? How many bottles does Emmylou Harris have left at midnight in her wine-titled song, recorded in 2005.
None?
Two more bottles of wine.
Are you serious? That was a question?
That was a question.
I got to look at that to make sure Scott's not lying. Oh, my God. That's a question. All right. Well, yeah. Folks, that's Wine Wars. If you want obscure questions about wine and some that are ridiculously easy, go in your local store that sells
things, Walmart.
Walmart or your TJ Maxx / Marshalls. Where things that wouldn't sell normally sell. Interesting. Scott and I will be playing this probably in a more permanent fashion with people that we thought we loved, but then now hate us. But that's okay.
Who's that? Anybody in our lives?
Our significant others.
Our significant others. I'm not sure Stevie likes us anymore.
Can you imagine, Deb, the indignance she would have about 15 minutes of this?
Yeah. Some of this she might know.
Nobody knows this dumb shit. The Emmylou Harris question? Is this a song?
Yeah.
I thought she was dead.
Maybe. She's wearing a wristless. Because it's all right. It's midnight, and I got two more bottles of wine.
Oh, you can press stop on that. Thank you.
We've been there before, though.
No, we didn't have two bottles of wine.
Oh, we've had more than two.
Yeah, but we can drink them.
Because it's all right. It's midnight, and I got two more bottles of wine.
That's right.
She's a fetching artist. She was wearing a forearm leather wristlet that had leather strips on it. So, like, when she was playing the guitar, the leather strips would flash in the wind.
Like a professional wrestler.
Kind of like a professional wrestler.
That's great.
I think she could take him, though.
Oh, folks, I feel dumber from what we just did, but that's okay, because we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So Scott is claiming he wants more Chateauneuf, and I could care less if he wants.
Oh, you just poured more yourself.
I did. My glass was getting light. There's a breeze in here. I did not want it to be blown away, so I had to anchor it down with more Chateauneuf du Pape. And we are drinking the 2001 Le Vieux Donjon Chateauneuf du Pape, presuming that you did.
Donjon.
Now, you. Donjon. So you know for the future. There is a, on iTunes at least, there is a 30-second skip function. So if you press that enough, you can get past where we do a potpourri over a trivia game that someone that I know bought for me, and I felt obligated. Because they ask, did you do that on your show yet? No, my co-star has COVID. And I can only use COVID for so many weeks.
No, you could say that I died.
Now I'm saying, well,
I wish Scott had died.
I said that.
I like that game.
I said that on privately. No, I we'll play it again, Scott, but not on the air. No, I'm going to
we'll play it on the air.
Oh, it's in the queue. Oh, it's in the queue. Oh, it's in the queue. Yeah, send money to our Patreon, which we don't have. And yes, we'll air that. So, Wine Wars. If you're really into wine. But even if you're really into wine, it's not hard enough for that. But then, if you aren't really into wine, it's too hard for that. So it's somewhere in the gray area because I've never seen a game that has such a uneven balance of difficulty in questions. Some things are so fucking random. Emmylou Harris? Who the fuck would know that?
Well, if you're a partier and you knew about wine culture.
You'd have to know about songs that just mention wine for 2 seconds. Nobody's into wine like that. If you're into wine...
Oh, no, people are.
But Scott, you're not into wine, but also into Emmylou Harris. If you're into wine, you don't live in a trailer, so therefore you would not be into Emmylou Harris.
That is so stereotypical. I am offended for all of our listeners that live in trailers.
To argue the counterpoint.
Many of them do.
Stereotypes are based in at least a whisper of truth.
Whisper?
A whisper of truth there. Just say. So. Whisper.
The stereotype of you being a douchebag is true then? Because there's a whisper of
truth?
That's
not a fucking whisper. That's a fucking bullhorn. But that's not me. Anyway. It's not about me this time. So
that's just a question.
What?
For the listeners. But I want to hear it from you. What's your favorite part of this wine?
Favorite part of this wine?
Yes. What is your favorite thing about this wine? This is a wine that you've... How many times has this moved with you? Three?
At least, yes. My favorite part is I've snuck more in my glass than you've gotten yours.
That's okay.
Yes. Now, volume...
There's no sneaking about that.
No, I was very obvious about it.
No, seriously. What's your favorite thing about this wine?
It's the herbaceous mint palate, Scott. The herbaceous mint palate is stellar. It's just so special.
You can pick those individual elements about the herbaceous out of there.
I could drink that every day. It happens to be the fact that it sings to us. There's many people that they would think that this is just dog shit. And that's fine. I mean, you always sound condescending, and maybe we are, when you say this, but you have to get to a certain level of wine drinking and palate development before you say, I enjoy this or that. And
this.
Well, things, too.
You have to be ready for this. Not everybody's going to appreciate this.
I think Becky would like this, too.
Yeah. Princess would love this. She would love this. But the Pagal, I think the difference between this and the Pagal is
size.
More people would appreciate the Pagal than this.
I don't know. I think
is that fair?
I think the Pagal is too much for most people.
There's that, but there's so many subtle things that you don't normally get to experience about this that I don't know are as appreciable for most folks.
Fair enough.
I think this has slightly more things going on than the Pagal had in it.
I don't remember, because it's been 2 years or so before the Pagal. Maybe a year.
The Pagal...
Pagal was...
I'll stand by that. I think the Pagal was bigger.
Oh, my and God. So I just had a sip that was tannic and big. My God, I wish I had 85 gallons of this stuff. I'm starting to sing now, Scott.
You remember a few episodes back, we did what's our favorite varietal?
Yes.
Grenache is growing up there for me, son.
Grenache is versatile.
I mean, you know I love the Australian Grenache.
Yeah.
This is... It is very versatile. And... You know, this is a blend, so some of the versatility comes from the other components in this blend, but the herbaceousness, the savory fruit, but the, it's like you said, that herbaceous mid palate, the thyme.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Like marjoram.
Oh yeah. It's a spice cabinet.
All spice.
Yeah.
If you want it to be there. I love the fruit that's present here, even though it's so settled in the bottle. It's, you know, 20 years old. It's still got that expression of savory fruit.
Absolutely. I wouldn't change this wine in any way.
Jesus in the meal, making more of it.
Okay, I'll make a 1.5 liter right now.
Just never ends. The fishes and the loaves, right?
That's a fan. I take this wine, and I make many of it. Yes.
What'd you have for dinner last night?
I'm using my divine powers right now. It's not working.
Vaudoujon. Yeah. How do you score this?
I scored it. Because I just got a really exceptional sip. So that's what I scored it. Yeah, I scored it right. Oh, yeah, I scored it right.
96 is my number. I was between 95 and 96.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I got it right. But it's free. What does it matter when you're at those numbers?
I gave it a 95. Yeah, I was a 94, 96. Scott, I agree. Anywhere between 94 and 96 is right. And that's where this is. And the folks, the fact is, and it's been decanted for a while, it's in the glass, and it is starting to open up even more. And there's a beastliness that still exists there. It's such a gorgeous thing. Yeah, it's definitely 95, 96.
The nose. The roundness of this, it's so, you know, we know what a beast this had to be when it was first bottled.
Undrinkable, I think.
Freaking beast.
Undrinkable, yeah.
And this thing has such a round, I don't know that we've talked enough about the mouthfeel of this thing. It's very round, I'm going to call it.
Yeah.
You know, with an aged wine like this, you don't have, you know, we talk about like, we love Turley and it's got this elevated mouthfeel, but that you don't have that with a 20-year-old wine. It's just different. But the mouthfeel of this is just, it coats your mouth and certain parts of that, the flavors just linger on.
Yep.
And I think that's why the herbaceousness of this wine is so distinct, because this mouthfeel somehow accentuates that herbaceousness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just, that thyme is so distinct.
Mm-hmm.
The marjoram is so distinct. You know, it's like I want to take this and put it in a marinara sauce. I can't express it anymore how herbaceous this thing is.
It's wondrous. But this isn't the first time we've experienced wondrousness. Yeah, now I think we gave, if we look back, we gave the Pigalle slightly higher scores.
And from, are you surprised by that? How would you rate those two? I know you said 2 years ago is a long time ago, but I
agree though. This is ultra high scores.
I think I like the Pigalle better than this.
The Pigalle, but I mean, this is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
However, the Pigalle is slightly better. It's bigger, but this is an amazing wine that goes into a place of prominence, something that you and I will never forget.
Yeah, for sure. And it's why you sell our wine.
It is.
This is why you sell our wine.
It's wonderful. Appreciate it. Cheers,
Scott.
Appreciate
you, brother. Cheers, man. Thanks for sharing this.
That's why I have it.
It's why we do this.
It is. There's so many wines to drink, folks. So many things to do. Oh, my gosh. I hope you enjoyed this episode, other than the Wine Wars trivia.
I like the Wine Wars trivia.
It wasn't bad.
I enjoyed it.
It wasn't too bad. I think we could amuse ourselves with it.
Well, I touch myself and my
body. Hey, lady loves, I know we could, like, play euchre or marbles or some other game, but we have this trivia game. It's called Wine Wars. Literally, I think we could take bets how many minutes into the game where they say, fuck this, let's play something different.
No, my wife would just say, I'm not playing that.
Yeah, I know. There's just no way.
She might violently strike one of us. And I know she hits me all the time. She hits me. No, she might hit you if she suggested it.
Well, I wouldn't, because I know.
She hits hard.
Yeah. No. I understand why it was on the discount shelves at Marshall's, but nevertheless, appreciate the effort. And I appreciate the thought by the person that bought it for me. It was a nice gift.
We could say the unmentioned name. Why not? She's listening. We want to call her out.
I don't know if she's listening or not. She's not a wine drinker. She also bought us Naughty Blush. That stuff. Naughty Blush.
Mm.
Yeah. It's not a wine drinker.
Did it come with a participation tag?
I actually don't know where that ever came from. I just saw that. I don't know how I put that on.
That participation tag, I got you that for your birthday.
Oh, then I must have put it on there.
So that is the bottle.
That is the bottle behind it.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. On the top shelf, folks, we have I Love Pizza. I know you all know that.
Trumpy.
Trump Wine. That was my last one. Thank you for taking stealing my thunder. And a 1.5 liter of Livingston Cellars White Zinfandel.
I'm supposed to drink that for some reason.
Oh, you will.
I don't think I will.
But I'm going to sell that. You'll be 60 4 years ago, you'll drink it.
I've got some White Zinfandel for you.
I cocksucker, I drank that, motherfucker.
And there's more of that to come.
You're going to say, hey, Rob, where's the bottle of Livingston Cellars? It's in your fucking glass, douchebag. Here on the Wine Vault. Good night, folks.